Hey folks, greetings from the Offensive Security Group here at Secure IT 360, coming at you with a new episode of the Cyber Threat Perspective. You've got myself, Brad, and of course, Spencer here today, talking about something super cool. We're talking about abusing WSUS for lateral movement. And so, neat topic, right? And we're going to deviate a little bit from some of the other things that we've talked about in that, you know, we're going to get a little bit more technical, right? And you can look for that from us going forward. And so if you like this kind of content, right? If you like us deep diving on stuff, you know, give us a message, right? Reach out to us, whatever you need to do, rate, share, like, et cetera. So I think the first question should be, let's frame this topic a little bit. What the heck is WSUS, right? Yep.
Yeah, definitely. So WSUS has been around for a while, right? It's nothing new. You know, this everything we'll talk about is not some groundbreaking new technique. There's no zero days. It's just kind of going back to what Microsoft products were made for, and that's just abusing how they normally work. Mm-hmm. So WSUS is Windows Server Update Service. It's one of Microsoft's built-in solutions for managing updates. Right, managing updates throughout your environment. And the reason for that is, you know, all of your machines can check into this one update server and pull updates from that server instead of going out to the internet themselves and downloading updates. So it kind of eliminates the need for all of your machines to communicate out to the internet. You can tighten up security a little bit in that way. And then they all centralize to that one Windows update server to pull their updates from. So it's centralized management and it helps with automation, right? All your patches are in one place. You can deploy them to different machines and have different policies, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, one of the values we found and the reason that we implemented WSUS, you know, in my corporate days is because we wanted to be in control of when and what came down the patch pipe, right? So, yep. You know, we wanted to have an opportunity to test these patches. And then if all the systems in our environment checked in with WSUS, which I think at the time it was called SMS, yep. Then, you know, we get to say, okay, this patch is dangerous, right? This patch breaks yep. stuff. We're going to hold that a little bit. So I find
definitely some of
that.
The key things you'll hear about later are groups. And so the way that WSUS works is patches are deployed through groups. So you might have a group for Windows 10, you might have a group for accounting, you might have a server group or a test group. And the way that the patch deployment works with WSUS is you approve the patches for a specific group of machines, and that's how you can do what you say, control kind of when, where, and how those patches get applied.
Yeah, agreed.
So during engagements, we normally see WSUS often, right? It's very common to see WSUS used. The other option is SCCM and then third-party products like Avanti. There's a whole suite of, or a whole slew of commercial products that does the same thing. But WSUS is very common because A, it's included with Windows, right? And it's free. It's built into Windows when you know, buy server licenses. And it's just kind of built in. It's just a feature in Windows Server. So we do see it quite a bit, and kind of a typical deployment is we typically see one server. However, there can be multiple servers. For example, something we'll kind of allude to later is we see a lot of times a two-tier architecture. So you have one WSUS server that can call out to the internet, right? That's the only server that can talk to the internet. It downloads patches from the internet, from Microsoft servers, and then it pushes those updates down to a secondary server or a downstream server, they call it, to deploy those patches. Mm-hmm. And a good patching or a good architecture is to have those separate servers patch different systems, right? You have different tier servers. So like your domain controllers, for example, are very important servers. They're tier zero servers. They need to be treated appropriately. You need to use the correct accounts with them. So you might have a different WSUS server to serve some of those more sensitive servers. So it's common to see, you know, multiple WSUS servers, but typically a lot of organizations just roll one server that can deploy to every machine in the environment, right? So if you're kind of playing along here, you can kind of see where this maybe is going a little bit. And communication is typically over HTTP. When you set up WSUS by default, it defaults to HTTP over port 8530. You can enable HTTPS if you want. It's easy to do, and it's something I recommend you do. But by default, it's just over HTTP, which has its own issues in itself. But that's kind of like what a typical WSS architecture looks like.
Yeah, and just by the nature of some of the words that you use, you know, the fact that I can talk to any machine on the environment, right? Or I have some level of control over maybe what is run on any machine in the environment.
Exactly.
Would indicate to me that these would be a very popular target. Yep. If we want to move laterally. And so it almost looks like a free lateral move if you can get on that box, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So that's exactly right, right? These WSS servers oftentimes will be able to deploy patches to every server in the environment, every machine, every workstation in the environment. And even further is, you know, what we see a lot of times is clients will have firewall restrictions. So workstations can't talk to another set of workstations, or the workstations can't talk to these other servers. The WSUS servers get around that because the WSUS has to talk to everybody to deploy the patches, right? Or to be able to allow hosts to check into those servers, rather.
Even if you had, though, a WSUS, like let's say you had your PCs and your server segmented, right? And you were smart enough to put your own WSUS server in both environments so they don't have to cross. But even then, in most cases, there's an upstream WSUS server that if compromised would still affect both the segments, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if you get access to the upstream server, even if you have, you know, 1, 2, 3, 7 downstream servers, they can all communicate up to that main server. And so, you know, if you do get access to that primary upstream WSUS server, you essentially can deploy patches to any of those systems.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So yeah, so it helps you get around network segmentation. So if you're in an environment where there's strong network segmentation and you need to be a little bit more creative to pivot, WSUS can help you do that. A lot of times they can even touch servers and DMZs. Depending on how the client environment is set up, VPN networks, you know, when hosts talk to VPN or when users VPN in, maybe WSUS is deploying patches when they're connected to the VPN in or when they're VPN'd in and checking in.
Seen these exposed to the public internet, right? I've seen these sitting on the internet so that people at home would, even when not on the VPN, reach out and pull down.
Yeah.
We've seen that as well. It's less common, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
COVID brought us that.
Yeah, you could definitely see why you might want to target WSUS, right? It's a good way to pivot, can provide you maybe a more stealthy way to move laterally in an environment. Because if you can deploy a patch and it looks like just every other patch and your payload is fairly benign, you could deploy ransomware, you could deploy whatever payload you want, essentially, that's benign enough to not get caught, you know, throughout the environment with, you know, a few clicks of the button. So it is a prime target for attack.
Right. But the next thing you're going to tell me is it is adequately protected, right? Since this thing has, you know, some level of control over tier zero assets, surely we have them at least as secure as tier zero assets, right, Spencer?
Yeah, absolutely. Nah.
Nope.
No, definitely not. And, you know, part of the reason I think, you know, when we talk about securing workstations, the community has been really good about saying, you know, you got to use LAPS, you got to randomize those local admin passwords on all your workstations and all that. And we do see that in quite a bit of client environments. We do see them using LAPS or something similar to have a random local admin account on all the servers. All the workstations. That's not the case on servers. So a lot of times we'll go into an environment, they'll have LAPS, but all of their server admin passwords are all the same. And so if we can compromise a server or get a credential that gets us access to one server, chances are good that credential will probably work on the WSUS server. We can pivot to that server and then, you know, start manipulating things and kind of abusing WSUS in that way. So it doesn't necessarily have any inherent protections. Although when we get into the attack scenario, one of the limitations is you do have to use a Windows signed binary for your payload. And so when you are kind of going through this attack scenario at WSUS, you do have to use a window signed binary to be able to create a malicious patch and deploy that out. And there, you have options to do that, but that is one limitation, I would say, to reduce kind of the attack surface of WSUS. But generally, from an IT administration standpoint, we don't see a whole lot of protection around it. But like you said, it should be treated as a tier zero asset. It should be treated like a domain controller or any other, you know, highly sensitive server.
Cool. Yeah.
So the attack scenario, what does this look like in, you know, practicality in real life? You know, why would I want to attack this as a pen tester? Why would a, you know, a bad actor want to go after WSUS? So we'll go through kind of a made up scenario, but one that is fairly realistic. And we'll kind of share why in a few minutes, but, so the scenario is, and this is also taken from Netitude Labs, and we'll share resources on this as well. There's a tool that they created to kind of help with this. Mm-hmm. But this scenario kind of comes from, or we get inspiration from the scenario from their blog that they wrote in combination with the tool that they wrote. And this inspiration comes from, you know, a real life penetration test that we've done, you know, over the years.
Sure.
So let's say you're on a pen test or you're on a red team and the client wants to see if you can compromise their backup server. This was alluded to in the Netitude blog. Let's say their backup server is not joined to Active Directory. Let's say it's a standalone server with only local accounts. Let's say the server's hardened, right? They, you know, they've done a good job protecting it, locking it down. And there's only one path, and that's through RDP from a specific host on the network using a local account. So
I'm going to search the file shares to see. No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly. Yeah. For free candy.
Yeah. For those of you that don't know, that's the inside joke. That's, you know, that's all there is to internal pen testing is just look for passwords on the file shares and you'll get whatever you want.
Yeah, for sure. So since WSUS is used to update most all the hosts in a Windows network, right? You know, we could potentially abuse WSUS to move laterally to that RDP jump box. In an effort to compromise that backup server in our file line activities, right? Compromise that jump box. Maybe we get some credentials there or find something that allows us to get to that backup server. So the way we can do that is by first compromising WSUS and inject our own, you know, malicious WSUS or Windows update to compromise that RDP jump box. And, you know, away we go. So that's kind of like a typical attack scenario of what it would look like, right?
From a
practical standpoint.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. You know, and I would imagine, well, let me back up before I assume anything. Are there records on the WSUS server that give you intelligence about the network as well?
Yeah, definitely. So when we're talking about kind of abuse protection, detection, things like that, from a detection standpoint, yeah. So the patch, the malicious patch, the payload that you deploy is resident on the file system. It has to be uploaded to the WSUS server in order to be deployed through the update. So unless you delete it, unless a bad actor deletes it, that will be there. And so you could use that, do some reverse engineering on it or analysis on it to figure out what was going on. So there will be a potentially a malicious file there. The metadata of the patch itself. So when you deploy a patch in WSUS, it has things like a title, a description, a patch ID, you know, all these different things called metadata, a KB number, et cetera, et cetera. And all those can be used as kind of a point of analysis as well. If you see something that is like exploit 123, that's probably a good idea that is not a legitimate Windows update.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And there's other IOCs, like in order to deploy a patch, like I said, you need to have those computers in a group. So if there's a strange group that was created that no one really knows how it got there, that can also be an indicator that something a little strange is going on in WSUS.
Yeah, I'm putting my, you know, blue team hat on for a second, and I'm thinking about, you know, I want to know what these event IDs are. And I want to know, like, you know, for example, it should be an uncommon event to create a WSUS group. That should not happen frequently. If that happens, I feel like it should be investigated. You know, maybe I can figure an alert or reach out to my, you know, third party MSSP or whatever it is and say, hey, you know, I'm sending you these logs, hopefully. What are you guys looking for? Because, you know, I would want to know.
In the logs, you know, the logs are maybe not in a common location. So the logs for the WSUS server are in program files, update services, log files. And in there, there's a, I forget the name of it. There's a log file. it's like subscription. I forget the name of it. It's like right on the tip of my tongue, but there's a log file.
Yeah.
In that directory that shows when a patch was downloaded, it shows you the path. It shows you some information about the patch, in the patches that are downloaded. And of course, Windows Event Log can be used as well to kind of spot some of this. But not all of it. So, it's definitely worth investigating what logs you're able to get from those WSUS servers.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Super cool. I feel like we're kind of opening or maybe putting some light on a dark corner of your network, right? Because you have this server out there. Almost everybody has a WSUS server, right? Unless you're like really small and maybe you just allow Windows Update to do its thing. That's cool too. But if you have one of these things, like, are you really watching it? Like, are you really, you know, cognizant of the risk that it poses should it be compromised? And I know there, I know, you know, to your earlier points, there are absolutely some bars that you have to get over, you know, some roadblocks you have to overcome to, in order to compromise this thing. That said though, the implications are pretty big when it happens.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of like Active Directory certificate services. You know, there was research that came out recently, and before that, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of attention paid to that, right? Yeah. And now there's, you know, a whole class of vulnerabilities related to Active Directory certificate services, and people are paying more attention to it. WSUS is one of those things that just kind of sits there in the background. It's kind of like SCCM in that way. Like, it's been around forever. There's legitimate ways to, or there's ways to abuse legitimate behavior of it. And you know, it's just one of those things to be mindful of and make sure that you recognize there are risks to it, and make sure that you protect it appropriately, do some tests, make sure you can, you know, monitor some things. Maybe you can get detected when there's new groups created or, you know, things happen that are strange. But definitely something to be mindful of for sure.
Sweet. I like it. All right. So one other thing I want to ask though, and this was a conversation you and I had had some time ago, is what are some of the roadblocks that an attacker has to overcome? So like, for example, you mentioned that the binary has to be signed, right? We can overcome that. Usually there's some, you know, I guess, let me back up for a second. By default, like the domain user's account doesn't have access to like console or to write to any of these sensitive directories or anything like that. Right. So it's got some, I guess, default server protections.
So that WSUS folder is, the content folder where WSUS downloads the patches to is shared out. It's a file share on your network. But just planting a file there, even if you could, doesn't really do a whole lot. Okay. So first step is compromise a WSUS server, right? So that might be difficult or impossible if you don't have any credentials or if you're not able to get to that server. So the first step is that WSUS server in most cases would have to be compromised. So you get a credential, you SMB relay, or you somehow otherwise get access to that WSUS server.
Right. Like you maybe you pop an account in the IT support group, which somebody in their infinite wisdom added to the server admins group, and suddenly, because of the joy of nested groups, you suddenly have everybody that's an IT support staff as a server admin. So something like that would work, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And then, you know, the next step is, okay, injecting a fake update with a payload that's legitimate. And like we said, that has to be a Windows signed binary. So it has to be signed by, it has to have a Microsoft signed, it has to be a Microsoft signed binary.
Sure.
And so you can't just use like any C# binary. Like you can't just run and
throw Netcat in there.
Yeah. You just can't just throw it in there. Cause it won't work. It has to be a Microsoft signed binary. Yeah. So there is some hurdles to get over with that. But like I said, you can use things like PSExec. that's a Windows signed binary, Microsoft signed binary. You could use things.
Oh, it's that easy, is it?
Yeah, so you can use PSExec, MS Build, run DLL32.
Wow. Okay.
You know, you name it. You know, essentially stuff that's on disk already from a Windows environment could potentially work. So there are some limitations, but those are kind of somewhat easy to get over. So, for example, you know, one of the things I like to do with this is run PSExec and just add an account to local admins or add my account to local admins and then, you know, RDP to that system or log in with PSExec or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Cool. So that's all the questions I have. And I know we're going to deviate even further from normal, right, at this point, and we're going to do a demo. And so for those of you, by the way, who are listening via audio, which I think is most folks, you know, come on over to our YouTube channel and you can see this episode. All of our other episodes are also recorded via video. And now we're going to do a live demo and hopefully it works.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
Otherwise, we will see you guys next week for our regularly scheduled podcast.